Welcome to Bellwether Friends, definitely not the first podcast featuring a discussion of pop culture and why we think you should like what we like. You should trust us, because we're librarians! I'm Anna, and I spent the morning thinking about horror.
I'm Aline, and just sort of in general, I have done the same things Anna has done, but I am not wearing red socks.
Are we going to re-record this?
I don't think so.
Every couple of weeks, we will get together with some people and chat about a couple of pop culture topics, what we think and how we feel. We'll end the show with our current obsessions. Today, we are happy to have both members of the girl gang with us. Yay! So, introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Allie. I'm a librarian in Mississippi.
And I am Amy, and I am a librarian in Massachusetts.
Welcome!
Yay! We are so glad to have you here.
We are excited to be here.
Well, of course you are.
We're excited to be here together.
Right. Obviously. Yes. Sure. You have each been here individually. We tried to split you up and confuse you and see if your stories matched, and it didn't work, so now we have you here together.
We are a team.
I believe Allie has said before to someone that we are joined at the brain.
It's true.
That sounds painful.
That's awesome.
But it works for us.
Team Initial A, assemble.
Hey, that's right. Here we are. This is Team Initial A.
Okay, so today's, you know, the introduction says a couple of topics, but we have one large topic to talk about because it's so important.
And it's multiple formats and
all the formats,
everything.
So today we're here to talk about what in the television land is called Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries. And in the book land is called, what, the Phryne Fisher series?
Basically.
Yeah.
I don't know if it has a...
I think they're just mysteries by Cary Greenwood.
Yeah. So, yeah. Phryne Fisher Mysteries by Cary Greenwood, of which there are 20. And I'm sure growing. She seems to be very prolific. Has various other books that she's writing.
Right. We're trying not to be impatient as she writes other things.
Yeah, I know. Well, she's gotta
she has to follow
express
her
herself.
Muse.
Like Madonna. Okay, so my first question for you, guest ladies, is when did you encounter Phryne? Was it book or television?
Show first.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was Margaret and Sophie that got me into it.
Oh, Margaret and Sophie.
And then I dragged Amy kicking and screaming. Not really kicking and screaming.
Yeah, so it was them as well as other people were talking about it on Twitter a lot, and I live on Twitter, basically.
Don't we all?
Yes.
So, yes. Right before or right as the second season was coming out, I decided I better...
So you guys are newcomers.
...get on that train.
Yeah, we didn't know, because they had been out... I mean, the books had been out for a while, and they had an American publisher, but until the show became kind of a cult hit in America, they hadn't been super popular, except among, you know, mystery readers.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the first one was published in 1989.
Yeah. It was when
I was 3 then.
Yeah, I was 2. So.
Well, I was reading mysteries, but I managed
to miss this. I think actually I was 2, but it was mostly Agatha Christie.
But, you know, our hardcore mystery patrons, they know all the series and everything. But among general readers, they didn't start to be more popular.
Yeah, there wasn't like a whisper of anything.
Right, until the show came out.
And I think part of that is like the Australian author thing, so it's not like she's gonna do author appearances or whatever and create buzz over here.
Yeah, she's a lawyer, so she writes like 3 series, but she also works, so she doesn't do a lot of appearances.
She's a busy lady.
She is.
Yes. And Allie and I were talking about this today because I am not really a mystery reader like at all.
What?
Yeah. And when I do, I'm more of like a psychological thriller type.
Which I think is why it took me a little longer to convince you to watch the show, because it says mystery right in the title.
Right, right, right.
And it doesn't say fabulous lady in awesome clothes doing whatever she damn well pleases.
That's how I sold it.
So then you went back and started reading the books.
Yeah, I did. I had heard that the audio was pretty good.
Yes, and I like the audio.
Yeah. So I got the first one, like on one of those free Audible sales, and then the rest is history.
Huh.
I have listened to them several times.
Yes.
And now, stop laughing at me.
This is fine.
Love.
I love them, and now, Amy is listening to them, and I am listening. We're listening at the same time because we're major dorks.
Aww.
We consume our media together.
Yeah, she kind of waited for me to catch up. And the show was actually the first thing that we texted each other about.
That's so true. It's like a milestone in our friendship.
Yeah, because we sort of knew each other on Twitter, and then for whatever reason, we had exchanged phone numbers. And I feel like it was like the first weekend.
I know, it came onto Netflix, and we were like,
"Oh, you guys!"
I know, it's like
adorable.
Our origin story.
I saw it before it was on Netflix through methods that shall not be revealed.
I'm sorry, is that the government knocking on your front door right now?
I don't think so. But I then got the, so I didn't see all of it, but I got the DVDs from the library when they were released on DVD, and I still haven't gotten through all of season 2, but I did see episode 7.
Yes, we watched an episode together that we'll talk about, but, so I think that my mom might have read them when she was in Australia.
Really?
Well, apparently in Australia, they're huge hits.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they're, like, super mainstream, which is one of the reasons why they made the show, is because it's one of those multi, like, generational hits. Like, older ladies love them, mystery lovers love them, but,
everyone,
you know, younger people like them, too. Yeah.
I almost thought we should make Little G watch one with us sometime. He watched Murder on the Orient Express with us.
Yeah, I think that it's possible that he would like it.
Sometimes.
He's very good. He's a very good watcher of things, and
Sophie's daughter likes him.
Okay,
yeah.
I looked up some interviews with Cary Greenwood, and they were asking her things like, "Did you ever envision it on the screen?" And she said that she held out against a film.
Yeah,
because of the V.I. Warshawski film.
Oh my goodness! Yes,
and she thought that they would make good TV movies, but she wouldn't sign until she had an actress that she wanted, or like a company that she trusted to make it.
Yeah, it's like an all-female creative team, which I think really shows through.
I think so too.
Yeah, well, and if you listen to the audiobooks at the end, there are little interviews between Cary Greenwood and
the narrator.
Yes.
Stephanie Daniel.
Who is amazing.
We love her.
And there's one, I've only listened to a couple of them, but one of them that I listened to specifically, Stephanie Daniel is like, "I would love to see this on TV."
It's really funny.
So I started, I watched the first season all at once, probably 2 years ago, a year ago, something like that. And I didn't think I wanted to read the books, and I was talking to my mom, and my mom was like, "The books aren't nearly as good as the TV show." And I was like, "Okay, Mom." But then I think that Allie had said something about the audiobooks, so I managed to get my hands on one, and I listened to it. And then I looked, and we don't have all of them in our library's network, and I told my boss, who is a huge fan, and so, like, that day, we ordered the 19 that we didn't have.
Yes. They're like crack.
So those are on their way for listeners
in Central
and Western Massachusetts.
The first few are really short, like time-wise, I mean, I think the first one's only, like, 5 hours long, which, yep. if you're an audiobook listener, you know, that's yeah. not long at all.
Yeah, it's 4 or 5 discs.
So, it's like, you finish, and you're like, well, okay.
More, please.
I need more immediately. So.
Yeah, I had to get a bunch from outside our system, because we don't even have them available for purchase on Overdrive, which I don't know if Overdrive just doesn't have the rights or what.
Yep, they're not in Overdrive. I had to buy CDs.
Yeah, because that's usually where we would have bought them at my library. But instead, I've been requesting the CDs through our system, and we have many of them, but a lot of them, there's only one copy,
and
some of them are in repair.
Yeah, if you want to get a CD copy of Flying Too High, there are like 3 in the system out here, and you have to wait.
Yeah,
yeah, I think that I have had one or two.
One of them, yeah.
There's a couple.
Commonwealth catalog.
Yeah, there's a couple that I just couldn't get, and I just broke down and got it on Audible.
Well, that's yeah, not that the was, worst there was thing one. In the world.
There was one I couldn't get, and Allie gave one to me through the, like, gifting system on Audible.
Yeah, it's a new thing. Have y'all done that?
Audible is an Amazon company.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Oh, that's right.
Y'all don't Amazon. Well, not there's a thing on on Audible now where if you have a friend that's on Audible, you can gift them one book that you own.
That is very sweet. Yeah.
So I just need to make friends with lots of people who have Audible.
Right.
That's true.
And then not tell me about it. That'd be great.
Well, you didn't pay for it. I paid for it.
And then change the password on my phone right. so I don't get caught.
So I want to back us up a little and talk about the episode, but there may be people listening to this who are like, what are you talking about? Tell us who is Miss Fisher and what is the setting of the show and what does she do? What does the format that it takes?
Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries is a book and TV series set in 1920s Australia. And the main character is Phryne Fisher, and she is a lady detective. And she is amazing. She does whatever she wants and whoever she wants.
Woohoo!
And she carries around a little gold gun, and she just assembles this... crime-fighting family in Melbourne in 1920s, late 20s.
The best part about the show might be the costuming.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Just so that you can see everything that she's wearing.
Oh, yeah. And that's been, like, a huge thing. They did, like, a costuming, like, a traveling costuming exhibit in Australia. I know. Really
want to go to Australia.
We're not going to say no to that.
I was reading an interview where the person asked her who designed the gowns on the covers of her books.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, my mother and I designed the gowns, and then Beth Norling does the pictures.
Oh my gosh.
That was one of the audiobook
questions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because she describes a lot of the fashion in detail very beautifully in the books as well.
But it's not, like, crazy too much. You know how sometimes when you're reading a book and you're like, we get it, they're wearing clothes.
They're fancy. Okay.
But it's always, like, Phryne is supposed to be the very fashionable haute couture.
And so each episode is a mystery that is usually unconnected to... another, like, there's no overarch. I think in the first season there was that.
There's one two-part. Well, yeah,
in there the first was that season, guy.
Yeah, and he's not in the books at all.
Yeah, I think
that was just
like
a TV
unnecessary for television.
Yeah,
we need more guys.
Well, I think they felt like they needed
something that ran
traditional,
this season.
Yeah, arc.
A through line.
Which is also what they do with Jack, who is. For those who don't know, Phryne's police officer friend, who in the books is very much just her friend, but in the TV show is her very dashing
love
will
interest.
They, won't they love interest.
Yeah.
Yes.
And in the books, he's just this super happily married, like, family man who likes to garden, who has this fun professional relationship with her.
Yes.
I like the tension in the TV show, but I also don't ever want it to be consummated. And so I am probably going to enjoy the audiobooks a whole lot because of that, because it's going to let me have that.
He doesn't even show up until, what is it, like 4 books in?
Really? Who's the cop she's talking to in the first one?
No, he's in the first one. He's just got a super small part in the first couple.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, because she gets under his skin.
Yeah, she's like, yeah. I think Carrie Greenwood didn't decide to make him like a big recurring one until like the 3rd or 4th book.
And I'm probably thinking of Hugh anyway.
Oh yeah, Hugh didn't show up. And
Dot and Hugh are much beloved to me.
Oh yes. My gosh, they're awesome. But the first one, so if anyone who reads mystery series, you get to know the people and then you follow them throughout and you're 20 books down the line or you're 40 books down the line and you're really, you just love these people. They're part of your lives. And in the first one where she's gathering the family together is just so awesome.
I know.
I love it so much.
How many of you read now, Eileen?
I have the second one queued up, but I'm in the middle of Rose Under Fire, so I have to finish that before I'm allowed.
So many emotions.
Yes, right?
Yeah, we're going to have to listen to that when we drive.
Can we listen to the second Phryne on the way to Hyannis?
Yeah.
Okay, it's on my phone.
Okay, perfect. She has her maid slash...
Assistant.
Companion.
Yeah. That's a good word. She has Mr. Butler.
In the books, she has Mrs. Butler.
Oh, excellent.
As well, yes.
She has her 2 cab drivers slash informants.
Bert and Seth.
Bert and Seth.
I love Bert and Seth.
Communists.
We kind of think that Bert and Seth is like lingo. Like, we'll text each other.
Oh my god, you guys. Eileen has a character she would like to read a description of from Cocaine Blues.
So... the difference between the TV show and the books, there are many differences, and they are charming as all get out. And of course, everyone loves Mac. Mac is wonderful, and she's amazing, and she's so awesome. But in the description of the book, I think I like her better than in the TV show, because, and I quote, she was 45 if a day, and having had the formidable determination to follow Dr. Garrett Anderson and struggle to become a doctor, she had had no time for anything else. She was as broad and as strong as a laborer, with the same weather-beaten complexion and rough, calloused hands. Her hair was pepper and salt, cut ruthlessly into a short-eaten crop. For convenience, she wore men's clothes, and in them she had a certain rather rugged style.
She's not in all of the books, but she does show up occasionally.
Yeah, and I mean, she's a great character on the show.
She's a great character.
But in Cocaine Blues, she has an important role, and she's awesome.
Yes, we're very fond.
That would be the first
one. Very fond of Dr. Mm-hmm. Matt.
For those of you who have no idea what we're talking about, that are still with us.
Sorry, y'all.
That's all right. So what we're going to do is we're going to discuss an episode. That would be season 2, episode 7, Blood at the Wheel. We're just going to go a little deeper.
Do you have a synopsis of it?
We're going to discuss how it represents the show. Okay. In the fast-moving world of an all-women's motor car garage, Franny's mechanic, Elsa, is preparing for an annual rally put on by the Victorian Automobile Association. Everything changes when Gertie, the driver for the ladies' team, is found dead in her roadster. The crash deals a solid blow to the case for women drivers and has Franny up in arms, struggling to convince Jack that her friend's death was no accident. Jack has his own inner battle to contend with, coming to terms with the absolute desolation he experienced when he mistakenly thought the motor car accident involved Franny Fisher, and decides that he needs to step away.
So Amy picked this episode. Bro, do you want to talk a little bit about why?
Well, the first thing, of course, when it was suggested we watch an episode, Allie and I were like, which one?
Which one's the most girl gang?
The most girl gang. because Allie and I together run jointhegirlgang.com, which is a blog about women supporting women. So obviously Phryne fits very well into all of our interests. But Blood at the Wheel is mainly about women. There aren't really, aside from Jack, who is always in it, and this one other douchebag who like runs
he is there to provide the women something to combat.
And of course there are other men driving in this race, but for the most part it is about Phryne, this woman who runs the garage, her daughter who works in the garage, and the female race car driver who was murdered. And that's one of the things I really like about Phryne, the books and the TV show in general, is that they sort of take apart the structure that we're used to with, like, the roles that men and women play and, you know, sort of how many women you're allowed to have to men.
Yes, exactly.
And they're just like, that, there's going to be just women. And the relationships in this one also are not, the relationships and the conflicts are not about men either.
And I think, because you've got Phryne and then you've got, you know, a woman who owns her own business, which is awesome. And the struggle to get women, you know, how she makes a bet to see if they can become full members of the, or members at all of the Victorian Automobile Association. Which made me think that the roadside assistance that they provide probably involve men in flannels.
But, yeah, I think, I mean, like, spoiler alert, if anyone hasn't seen this episode of this TV show that's been out for several years now, the victim was a woman. The person that ended up being the murderer was a woman. And it just flipped gender roles all over the place. When we were watching it, Amy pointed out that, you know, that this man keeps talking about how women are so emotional and their biology keeps them from driving, but it's Jack in this episode who keeps getting distracted by his emotions.
That's because men are weak and fragile creatures ruled by their emotions.
Yes. Also, they're, like you were saying, they flip all of these roles over, and they have these women, like, using people to their own ends, and, you know, doing whatever it takes to succeed in their field, and, you know, impersonating.
And for their particular needs.
Yeah, and it's great, and it's something that is recurrent in the Miss Fisher mysteries. Phryne is, you know, looking out for herself, and she's looking out for people who need looking out for, often women, and she's doing whatever she wants in whatever context she wants, which we've already mentioned, but we're not explicitly, you said she does whoever she wants, and it's true. She, you know, she has sex with different men, and sometimes she does it more than once, and sometimes she doesn't.
It's great.
I love seeing it represented in the media in any way.
Yeah.
In such a positive, affirming way.
Yeah, well, she is completely who she is.
Yes. And there are so many different kinds of women in sort of the Phryne universe altogether, but in this episode even, you know, Phryne is a very specific kind of person. And then there's, you know, Dot, who doesn't even want to learn how to drive a car.
And Phryne's totally fine with that. That's the Phryne-Dot relationship in the books and the show is something that me and Amy both adore, because they're complete opposites, like, would not have ever met if it wasn't for, like, a chance occurrence, and they love each other and support each other fiercely, even though they never want to be anything like each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's one of the great things, because it is, like, there's a moment in the episode where Hugh, Dot's boyfriend, essentially, says, you know, that he's glad she doesn't drive, and she says, oh, yeah, you know, I don't want to, it makes me nervous, whatever, and he makes a crack about how it's more complicated than her sewing machine, and she says, I would like to see you run my sewing machine.
Right, I couldn't run a sewing machine.
Yeah, I like that, it's hard. Too.
Yeah, but
Amy can sew, I can't sew.
Yeah. And it is hard. I have
can drive a stick shift, but I cannot sew.
I can do both.
Oh, I can't do either.
Oh, Allie.
How do I feed myself?
I don't know.
I work hard at my own job, and I have a disposable income to pay people a fair wage to do that for me.
Okay.
There you go.
Feminism.
Exactly.
Works for everyone.
But yeah, I mean, that's like Bryony, or Dot doesn't want to learn to drive, but she still is very, you know, reacts very fiercely to the sexist idea that she somehow couldn't or wouldn't be very good at it. And, you know, there's all these different women who want different things, but they're still supporting each other. They're not, you know, at each other's throat or fighting over a man or of those.
I've heard about these
traditional things,
but I don't actually know anything about them.
Yeah. What, men?
No, like fighting over men. I don't understand.
I have to tell Anna. It's not nearly as common. Womanhood as sometimes.
Not yes. Womanhood. Womanhood is constructed by a certain.
Yes, type there you of go.
Society.
But women fighting over men is not nearly as common as the media would lead you to believe.
Yes.
So I was wondering how, idly, how historically accurate someone like Franny would be, and she Carrie Greenwood says that she's bold but not impossible for that period, and it's not as easy as it used to be bold in the 21st century, she says.
Well, yeah. A lot of it is because she's very rich.
Yes.
And, like, she makes no bones about that in the show or in the books. She has a whole lot of class privilege and a whole lot of wealth privilege, but she knows it, and she uses it to her advantage and the advantage of the people around her. If she wasn't of the social class that she was, she would be completely outrageous and ostracized.
Right. And she is going to stay firmly in 1928, according to the author.
Well, yeah. It has in the 15th or the 16th book, it's New Year's. So the books. Yeah. She ran out of months. So the books at the end are in 1929.
Okay.
But yeah, so she very firmly says over and over in a lot of books that society needs her a lot more than she needs them.
Yep. Right.
And that's where her power comes from.
Yeah, it's very open in the books, and she's very aware of sort of walking the line of how far can she take something with which people, because of how much her social and actual capital are needed by them.
I see what you did there, bruh.
Thanks.
Good job.
I just think she's a great addition to the line of lady detectives, you know. She's just like what you would have hoped to see. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm really glad that the show has made the books more popular.
Yeah, definitely.
I know that a lot of our librarian friends have started reading them or becoming more interested in them. I dragged Amy into them, and then I dragged Aileen into them.
Thank you.
Well, I was reluctant for similar reasons to Aileen, but I had heard the opposite, which was that from a male coworker who I adore and trust in terms of his opinion, which is not always the case with men. But he had seen the show and had read all the books long before the show came out. And he actually hated the show and was like, she's so different. I don't like it at all. I don't think it's true to the books. And so I had been reluctant to read them, thinking that it was going to be too different. But because someone had told me they were better than the show, and I was like, the show is amazing. What is that for you?
Yeah, there are very real differences. And I have great ambitious plans to write some sort of piece for Girl Gang about how the differences in the Franny universe between the books and the show, they complement each other rather than fighting against each other. Like, her age is very different in the books, and like her family setup is different in the books and that kind of thing. And a lot of time that kind of thing bothers me, but it doesn't at all. Well, I just find it very charming.
Cary Greenwood is involved in the show, and I feel like, you know, if it's different, the medium is different. You know, it has to be packed into an hour, and if she's there, like, making creative decisions, then basically, I think the spirit is the same.
It's definitely the same.
And so
there are a lot of differences, but she feels very similar. She's a lot younger in the books. I mean, Essie Davis, the actress, she's in her 40s, I think. Even though she looks completely timeless, she's one of those women that could be 25 or, you know, or 50. She's just amazing. But in the books, she's our age, isn't she, bro?
Yeah, she's like 28,
turning 29.
Yeah.
Which is crazy for me to watch her, like, managing this household and, like, having staff, like, being my age. And I'm like, well, I dragged myself out of bed today.
Having two adoptive daughters.
Yeah, right. In the book, she has two adoptive daughters at the age of 28. So, yeah, it's interesting to relate to her in that way.
I think that they're complementary documents. I love true adaptations that are, like, just sort of word for word and really feel really good, and the purest reader would be satisfied with the film. But I also like having the agility to make it relevant. Or, I mean, they talk about the fabulous clothes, and then they have fabulous clothes, and so that's, you know, that's very parallel between the books and the TV show. But they're doing really great things and making it relevant to our viewership as well, which I think they do a great job with it, and I am very grateful to them.
Yeah, there are a lot of characters that are sort of smushed together in one character. Like, for example, in the books, she has two adopted daughters, Jane and Ruth, and in the TV show, she just has the one, and they very much sort of took bits from both girls to make the character on the show. And, you know, Mr. Butler is a widower, whereas in the book there's, you know, his wife is there. And I, just from a format perspective, it's very much like they had to drop some of those characters.
Because there's no way.
That's the kind of stuff you have to do for television.
And also, like, in the books, she's sleeping with boys, like, all the time. Multiple men in each book. And, like, first of all, just for space, you couldn't show that.
You had to cut that back.
Yeah. So, also, I think some of the, I mean, even when it started becoming hugely popular in America, there were some, you know, pearl clasping articles about.
Oh my god. I mean, considering some of the stuff on television here.
Oh yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it's like, heaven forbid some woman, be going to bed with men just because they're attractive and nearby.
Yeah.
If you reverse that, men never do that on television shows.
Yeah, one of the interviews that Essie Davis gave was like, you know, men have always had James Bond. Like, he does the same things.
That's
and everybody
true.
Loves it.
That is true.
Yeah. Well, in other, you know, even more modern and, you know, on, you know, television based characters who are detectives or playboys, there's always, even if it's not you know, doesn't show them having sex, there's always, you know, some different woman dropping them off in the morning or picking them up for a date, you know, every evening, and the clear implication is that they are having sex with all of these different beautiful women, and
nobody says anything.
Yeah, nobody even thinks about it.
Well, that's our culture.
I'm glad we have Miss Fisher doing it. Thank you.
Sure.
taking one for the team.
We love her.
Okay, so I want to move our discussion on to Rita likes, because the inevitable thing that will happen is that someone will get to the end of the three available seasons of Miss Fisher. Is it three?
Mm-hmm.
And say, okay, now what am I supposed to do? And then, so you tell them, well, read the books.
Right.
But then they might come back to you and say, well, I like the books, but I'm not like Allie, and I'm not going to start rereading them right away.
Look.
So, can you give me some read-alikes / watch-alikes? I don't know if watch-alike is a word, but...
It is.
Watch-alikes. That you would recommend people go to, that they don't have to be like exact corollaries, but the spirit of Phryne should inhabit them in some way.
Yeah. Well, as far as read-alikes, so there's a whole, like, if you're not a huge mystery reader, if Phryne has kind of been your introductor to mystery readers, there's a lot of really cool, like, the mystery genre gets super specific. Like, you can have, like, very targeted interests here. But there's a lot of cool lady detectives or lady amateur detectives.
There are multiple yoga teacher detectives.
Oh, yeah. It gets super specific.
Yeah.
So there's the... there's the Maisie Dobbs books by Jacqueline Winspear. I don't know if you're familiar with those, Aileen.
Oh, yes.
There are 12 of them. I think the 12th one just came out. And Maisie was a nurse during World War I, and she's kind of a lady detective. She's more serious than Phryne is. But she's they're set in London. She's established herself in London. And she's kind of navigating the world in the time between the two wars she's like incredibly intelligent, Oxford educated, very thoughtful kind of detective. So those are really good. And then if you want something a little more unusual, there's the Flavia Deluce books. Right. Do you know those?
Yep.
I love those. So Flavia Deluce is an 11-year-old British chemist in the 1950s. And they're written by a man. But
Disclaimer.
but they're really great. She's a genius, and she's very precocious. But she actually, her intelligence is through the roof, and she lives in this crumbling English estate with this weird family. In this tiny village, and she's super interested in chemistry. And I just read a galley of the 8th one is coming out in the fall, and they're very charming. As far as watch-alikes, I mean, Murder, She Wrote is always going to be fun. I mean, but there's not really anything exactly like Phryne.
No, not really. I have a patron who loves Phryne Fisher. And he is a 40 to 50 something African American man, just so that you know, she has a broad appeal.
Love it.
He really likes, also, he's always looking at for more Murdoch mysteries, mm-hmm. and more Midsummer Murders. So those are things that came up when I was like, you know, Googling watch-alikes. But
yeah, with our patrons, there's a lot of crossover there too. But for me, that doesn't work so well because I don't really
not like mysteries.
Super interested in those things. I don't dislike mysteries. I just am usually not super into it. But so watch-alikes was really hard for me, and read-alikes because I don't really read mysteries.
I got you, bro.
Grew up, my mom read psychological thrillers and like that sort of mystery, so the few that I have read fall.
Bro, I think you'd like Flavia though, because they're not mystery-y.
Yeah.
There's we don't care if you like mysteries or not.
We don't care.
Well, and there's two that I did think of when I thought more along the lines of sort of Phryne herself.
Yep.
And they're both YA because that's like all I read as a YA librarian.
Perfect. This is good.
Just my personal preference. But I thought of Unspoken by Sarah Rhys Brennan, which is...
Ooh, I love that book.
I do as well. It's the first in the Lynn Byrne Legacy trilogy. Yeah. It is. It has more of a fantasy element, but Cammy, the lead character, is a young woman. She's a reporter.
An intrepid girl reporter.
Yes, exactly. and she's very... Even though there is, you know, love involved and romances, she's very focused on what she wants and what her priorities are. There's very much that feeling of sort of building a family around herself in addition to her actual family in this town. And so that occurred to me. And then the other ones, which I absolutely love, and there are four books, and unfortunately... it's over now, are The Agency series.
Oh, I was going to recommend those, so thank you.
Yes. the first one is called A Spy in the House. And this, like, just occurred to me on my drive home from work. So I am, like, forgetting all the details. But so, it's in London, turn of the century, right?
Her name is Mary, and she's, like, raised, and she's half Chinese. And she's raised in, or she goes to this girls' school for spies.
Yeah, well, she was a thief, and she was about to be hung at like 10 years old.
And then the spy school was like, "Here, we'll take you in,"
or whatever. Yes.
And they cared for her, and then at a certain age, they're like, "We are actually a secret detective agency."
So that's awesome. My friend Curiosity Jones gave me the first one years and years ago, and I never read them because I guess I didn't read the flap.
One over there.
I love them very deeply, and it's got that element of, you know, the two women who run the school and thus the like secret, you know, basically private investigator agency. They use themselves and, you know, girls that they choose and then train, because women can go unnoticed and can go places that other people can't. And it's very interesting to watch Mary grow, and there's a romance involved that reminds me very much of sort of the Jack Phryne feeling, even though of course Mary is a fair bit younger.
Yes.
But it has that very sort of swoony tension for the most part. And it's very interesting to watch Mary sort of sort through societal things and her own issues with it's basically a secret that she's of Asian descent, and to see sort of the different things that she does and goes through. I thought of her because in, I think, the second book, she's dressed as a boy, like, almost the whole time.
Be a man.
That was gonna come up.
Yep. But in the Phryne book that I just finished, Phryne dresses as a boy a couple of times to go out and walk about unnoticed.
Oh, Miss Fisher.
Yeah.
But so I highly recommend The Agency.
Yes. Definitely.
Excellent. Is it my turn?
Sure.
So, I am a lifelong mystery reader, and I have been readers advising for a real long time, too. And when Miss Fisher came out, I actually confused her with Iris Cooper, K.K. Beck's flapper lady detective, who lives in Oregon instead of Melbourne. And there are several of those out there.
Three or four, yeah.
I beg your pardon?
Three or four.
Yeah, three or four of them. And they're, but, you know, she lives in the Pacific Northwest, so maybe I knew about her because she was a local author when I was learning how to be a librarian. And so those are like the Franny Fisher Mysteries, they're slim little volumes that you can blow through, but they have a real similar vibe. But they're nothing matches Franny. I will be upfront about that. But that's the flapper mystery thing. You can look at you can look up stuff set in the '20s in your catalog or in your novelist enhanced content in your catalog.
So I was trying to look up nonfiction read-alikes. Like I was trying to see if we could find stories of women in the '20s or something, and I'm having a real hard time. And I was wishing there was a novelist for nonfiction, which I'm sure is a
there is Novelist Plus.
Okay, well we have Novelist Plus, and it was not helping me.
Well, a new book just came out. What was it called, Amy?
Pistols and Petticoats. Yes.
Yeah.
Girl Waits with Gun by Amy Stewart.
There you go. I was about to mention that. It's based on a real person.
Trouble. Yes.
Constance Cox. She was like the first deputy sheriff in America ever, and they're based on her.
You were talking about something else when I interrupted.
Sorry.
You.
No, that's all right. That's all right. So then I was off on another track, which is I was trying to figure out like what sources she uses for her research. Like does she use biographies of, you know? So I was trying to find interviews where she said, like, this book is really important to me, I use this. So I came across this book, which I have a copy of in my library's collection, called How to Write Killer Historical Mysteries. And she says, because I did a legal history, I write about 1928 because I did a legal history thesis-length essay on the 1928 wharf strike. Everyone else was doing my father the judge and my dad was a wharfie, so I thought, why not? You have to imagine this in an Australian accent. So when it came to writing a detective story, I thought I knew 1928 pretty well. As it happened, I didn't. The trouble with the recent past is that it is another country, not so foreign as, say, ancient Greece, but not contemporary, so it needs constant checking. How did one light a stove? Matches? What sort of matches? Since there were stocking mending kits, they must have been mended, but how did you mend stockings? What does art silk feel like? How often did Franny wash her hair, and what did she wash it with? How about the ladies' traveling necessities, which sound like disposable sanitary pads? How, in fact, did one maintain oneself when such a lot of familiar things hadn't been invented, not to mention things like films and radio and popular culture, a minefield that easily got entirely wrong? These things are not in newspapers, my primary source, but they are in memoirs and in people's heads. I went and hunted down every old lady, still in possession of her senses, and relentlessly listened to everything she could tell me about being a young woman in the '20s. I drank buckets of tea and ate bushels of scones and absorbed 1920s womanhood through the pores.
Hashtag life goals.
Right?
Amen.
Right? The really nice thing about this sort of research is that old people like to feel that their memories are valued, and the ruthless author is actually spreading a little cheer as well as garnering irreplaceable information.
She's such a neat person. Like, all these little interviews that we've been listening to, like, on the audiobooks and stuff, she just revels in the time period and makes these people feel so real. And the wharf strike, like, every couple of books, like, Bert and Sess are wharfies, so every couple of books she'll check in with them and have somebody ask them, like, how's the wharf strike going? And they'll be like, it's going to go on forever, mate.
Basically. So yeah, what I have for read-alikes, the only watch-alike that I saw that I kind of was like, huh, someone suggested Castle.
What?
I saw that too.
And, but like, as
the chemistry.
The chemistry and the flick roles, like, it would be,
okay,
Castle is Miss Fisher.
And honestly, as someone who has always adored police procedural style TV shows from Remington Steele up through and including Castle, I'm there. Yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
The banter.
Castle.
Uh-huh.
So, and then for read-alikes, I'm going to say for the middle grade Cat Incorrigible books.
Oh, yeah.
By Stephanie Burgess, which I mentioned on the last episode that we recorded. But I think that Kat has, like, the spirit of Franny. She's, like, inquisitive, and she's definitely going to go do whatever it is she thinks she has to do. And she does not care about any of the consequences.
And she's really. 12.
And she's 12.
And so just imagine what so she's going to grow up to be.
And then a series that I read when I was younger, but still like, is the Amelia Peabody series by Elizabeth Peters. So that is a Victorian Egyptologist lady who is really no-nonsense and kind of heedless about her safety, but also really smart. And then the third one, since Amy stole one of mine, is the Peter Wimsey series by Dorothy Sayers. Dorothy Sayers is one of the influences that Kerry Greenwood cites.
And if you read further into the Franny books, Franny is always either reading Miss Sayers or Miss Fisher. Because, like, the books will be coming out in real time in 1928.
Got it.
So she talks about how she's picking up the new Christie or the new Sayers. It's fun.
That's cool. Awesome. So that was what I had for my list. I do also, and I think that both the movie and the book of Cold Comfort Farm, this sort of the heiress who's at loose ends and she's gonna go down to the property that she's inherited and go see what's going on. No, she just sort of has a lot of money and time and is like, all right, well, I'm gonna go. That one has the humor, I think. So,
yeah.
Okay. Good job, team.
Awesome. Wait, Elena brought you a passage to read to you, though.
Oh, good. That's right. We did have...
when we were watching the episode, you texted me about how excited you were about the Adventuresses Club.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
So, did you want to say a little about the Adventuresses Club on the show?
I am well known to be a reader of historical romances, and in the episode that we watched, season 2, episode 7, Blood at the Wheel, Phryne and Mac, the episode opens with Phryne and Mac shooting billiards in their version of a gentleman's club that is the Adventurous Club. Which is a ladies' club, gentlemen's club type of thing. So it's like super posh, and they have their cocktails, and they're
and everyone in the room ties. Was wearing pants.
Everyone's wearing pants, and they're playing billiards, and they're doing all of the things that they might want to do that that may or may you know it may or may not be appealing to them. You what?
I know, right?
We need to get ourselves one of those clubs.
I think that's your house, Anna.
Yeah, it is our house. But I loved it because. There have been a couple of romance series where ladies tried to like start up a club and their husbands put a stop to it post haste, and I liked seeing it realized visually, and it made me really happy. So, do you have something from an actual book talking about
it? Yes. So, it's first brought up in Away with the Fairies, which is also an episode, but in the book is where the Adventuresses Club is, and she's kind of explaining it to another woman, and there's some backgrounds. And one of the things that I did when I tell you that's not in this passage is that everyone in the Adventuresses Club is known by their first name because that's what is theirs, and even the married women. So she's like posh and high society, but everybody in her club calls her Miss Franny as opposed to Miss Fisher, which I love.
Excellent.
Yeah. So there's two passages about the club. I picked the ones that I know you would like. So there's a quiet room where silence is absolute, no talking at all. In a woman's life, silence is the rarest commodity there is. There's a large room for parties and lunches. There's a few small bedrooms for visitors, and there's an end of tether room. And her guest goes, "What's that?" And she says, "It's soundproof. One can scream and not be heard. Space to scream is another thing that's severely limited in modern female life."
Oh, this sounds better and better.
That is awesome.
Amazing. They literally have a room for you to just go scream in.
It's amazing. And so later on, I had to pick out the one where they were talking about the library, and I included this sentence for Anna. No one weeded the Adventuresses Club library.
Oh, man.
Well, we're going to have to petition for membership. And
okay, but let me tell you why. Let me tell you why. The members themselves were required to write copious notes, if not actually publish books on their own adventures. Unpublished books could not be borrowed. The committee had strong views on the way that amazing deeds done by women vanished out of the historical record, and they had a collection of the works of Mary Kingsley, Gertrude Bell, Flora Tristan, Mildred Cable, and Francesca French, among others, to prove it. Friney heard that the club was intending to bring out small editions of the Traveler's Tales just so that no one could delete them again, so that no one could call an explorer, by definition, he. Ooh. So it's a place for them to go, but it's also...
You're gonna make me cry! Tearing up a little over here.
It's also an organization right. where the history and value of... the history of women and contributions of women are very valued, and they're promoting that, so...
I would also like to mention that they have a sexy lady, Dorman.
Oh, they do! They totally do! They talk about her muscles.
Nice.
Like, everybody that works there is a woman, the cook is a woman, they have a lady's maid who help if somebody is upset or needs to be attended, they have somebody, a woman that can help, like, change stockings and
We're
stuff.
We're Kickstarter.
So. Yes.
I know!
That stuff.
So, yeah, I thought that y'all would like to hear a little bit about the Adventuresses Club.
Thank you.
We will be reading more. I'll have to see if I can get the third one for our trip, because our trip is going to be... maybe we'll just need the one book. Awesome.
That is awesome. Okay. I feel good. We should watch this show / read the book. You've convinced me. So we are going to do our musical obsessions. Why don't you start, Allie? And Amy,
me and
you
Amy have
the
same,
one.
Yeah. Go yeah. for it, bro.
It's Lemonade. Beyonce.
Really? I have no idea what you're going to say.
We're totally obsessed. Completely.
I literally have not listened to anything else in a couple weeks, especially since I missed, like, the first week of Obsession because I was moving. And so I couldn't really, like,
I listened to something else today while I was working, and it felt weird.
So sorry, Hamilton.
I'm on the way home from work today. I listened to the Unfriendly Black Hotties podcast about it.
Uh-huh.
And yeah. It was just 40 minutes of them just talking about, just sort of pausing and being like, yeah, wow.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot to digest and, like, learn and different things, and I have to do a shout out to Allie's amazing work on Join the Girl Gang. We have a huge list of think pieces and articles and reactions to Lemonade, and the everything on the list is written by a Black woman.
Yep.
And Allie deserves the credit for that one. Because I was moving, and because she is amazing.
Librarian.
And so there's a lot of really interesting stuff there about, like, culturally the things she's talking about, and, like, the historical references in the visual version, and just a lot of, like, just amazing things.
We're obsessed.
Yes.
Excellent. We haven't gotten there yet.
We will.
We will.
That's yeah, we just got Hamilton like
okay,
2 weeks ago.
our musical obsession is from Mulan. I'll Make a Man Out of You.
Nice.
I've listened to it now about 10 times today. There's a BuzzFeed quiz to see if you can get the lyrics all right. And
I mean, the movie's
can.
On Netflix, so
no problem.
Right. Mulan's on Netflix.
It was. Is
excellent.
It not
we watched it, like, a few months ago.
Okay. I was trying to come up with a musical obsession
and?
Of my own. I mean, I have been singing Be a Man.
I know.
All afternoon.
Yeah, good song.
But in the last week, we attended cultural night at school, and we also attended our local pride parade, and the multicultural night at school had a band performing that consisted of Latino musicians from the various Caribbean, Latin areas.
Cuba?
Puerto Rican and Cuban, and mostly. And they played Guantanamera.
Yes, they did.
And then the local Mexican restaurant had a float in the Pride Parade with a mariachi band on it, and they played Guantanamera.
So that's your obsession?
And so that's my musical obsession. We're going to find a good version to put it on the musical obsession list.
Okay.
I am going with the historical references in the last episode and this episode, and I'm going to mix that list up.
Okay, works.
So what is your regular obsession, Allie?
I'm super into comics, as always. And I just got today in the mail, I just got issue 5 of Patsy Walker, a.k.a. Hellcat.
Oh, yeah.
I love.
I have that waiting for me.
And I just got issue 1 of Goldie Vance.
Oh, yeah. I have
Goldie
that, too.
Vance.
Yep.
4-issue series from Boom. Brand new. Only 1 issue out. And it is adorable. And I love her. And I don't know if it's a planned miniseries or if we're hoping for a pickup, but it's super cute. So, yes, Lady Comics, always.
Woo!
Right.
The kind you read, not the kind you laugh at.
Right, yeah. Although they're good, too. There's
we're okay with them.
Yeah. Two Dope Queens is a new podcast of lady comedians.
Queens, write that down.
Yeah. Listen to that, yeah.
All right.
So, all the Lady Comics covered.
Okay, got it. What about you, Amy?
So, I will say, it just occurred to me, I'm obsessed with the webcomic called Check, Please. It's on Tumblr. You can also look it up as, I think, Oh My God, Check, Please. I can't remember, and I'm not getting the right link here, but it's a webcomic.
We'll track it.
Yeah. But it's a webcomic that is created by a lady. Allie and I are obsessed with
all ladies
and lady created things specifically, which is why we always mention it.
Who isn't? Really?
Losers. That's who.
Yeah.
I think even men who are trying to legislate women's bodies are obsessed with lady things. They just aren't ladies.
That's the truth. But Check, Please is about a young man going, he's a little southern boy going to college, and he plays hockey, and it's about him and the hockey team, and everyone, all the characters are adorable and funny, and it's just really lovely and sweet and cute, and there's lots to catch up on, which is always fun. Like, it's been going for a while.
I think Corey likes it.
Yeah, Corey is into it. A lot of other people. It's one of those things where every time I feel like somebody hears about it, or you convince somebody to go and look at it, in a couple of days they're coming back to you like, I have already read all of it. Where is more? I need everything.
I love comics like that.
Yes. But so Check, Please is amazing, and she is currently updating. She does like short bursts of lots of stuff. And then my other obsession is, I'm, now that I'm done moving for the most part,
yay,
I'm getting back to my Netflix list, because I haven't had like the emotional energy to watch anything except for Franny and Parks and Rec. So I started Farscape over.
Ooh, okay.
Again. Woo! Because I did not get all the way through it before. And one of the really fun things about it that's connected to Franny is that it is also Australian made.
Yay!
And so you start to see the same actors.
Like, there's only like 4 actors in Australia.
It's sort of like watching Xena and seeing all the New Zealander. I think it's New Zealanders.
Yeah. It's like if you watch enough BBC period pieces, it's the same 10 people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's even worse in Australia, or how, depending on how you want to, because there was definitely, there's an alien character who wears like all leather clothes, and her boobs are always pushed up, and she has this giant red curly hair, and she's really like sort of annoying and all this stuff, and I was just like, who is that? And I couldn't figure out for ages who it was. It is the same woman who plays Mac.
Oh. Really? Allie, you just started watching Buffy, but now you're going to switch to Farscape.
Oh my gosh. Thank you, Amy. Oh, Island Nations.
Did you have an obsession?
My obsession, which has been going on, we just sort of figured out that this is an obsession, and I believe it may be ongoing, and it's that every day I read about 10 BuzzFeed lists. It's like all I do is read BuzzFeed lists, and I try to only send one a day to Anna, or read bits of one or two aloud if she's in the same room. But I am a BuzzFeed addict. My name is Aline, and I am a BuzzFeed addict.
But you don't have the app.
I do not have the app, because I think that it would, like, wake me up in the night with lists to read.
Guess what?
I'm afraid.
You liked all these lists, so you'll probably like this one, too.
I have been on kind of a BuzzFeed video kick. I didn't even think about that. That is also kind of like a sneaky obsession for me.
Yeah, see? I'm not alone.
BuzzFeed does good stuff.
They do. Also, they do not format them as slideshows, which is awesome.
Straight lists. I hate those slideshows.
That's right.
Lists forever. All right, my obsession is a book that we're reading with little G called Alcatraz versus the Evil Librarians by Brandon Sanderson.
Yay!
And I have previously read it to myself without a child, but I am reviewing it with him, and he is so far entertained by it. The conceit is that all of us now are currently living in the Hushlands, which is controlled by evil librarians who control all the information in the world, and that there are places we don't know about called the Free Kingdoms, which are where that big empty spot in the Pacific Ocean is, I think. So I'm going to read a little bit.
Do you think we would be evil librarians?
Yeah, yeah.
We are. George has
said
decided.
He knows what it's like to live with evil librarians. So
to live in a world controlled by librarians.
So, okay. So, let's see. Perhaps you've never experienced the full suffocating majesty of a true library. You Hushlanders have probably visited your local libraries. You've perused the parts that normal people are allowed to see. These places tend to have row upon row of neat bookshelves arranged nicely. They are presented attractively for the same reason that kittens are cute. So that they can draw you in, then pounce on you for the kill. Seriously, stay away from kittens. Public libraries exist to entice. The librarians want everyone to read their books, whether those books are deep and poignant works about dead puppies or nonfiction books about made-up topics like the pilgrims, penicillin, and France. In fact, the only book they don't want you to read is the one you're holding right now.
Dun, dun, dun.
I know, right? So, anyway, this is a little taste.
That's fun.
It is fun. The new editions are illustrated, and so even when his attention wanders, you can draw it back by saying, hey, look at this drawing.
Hey, bro, do you want to be an evil librarian?
Yeah, basically.
Am I not?
We all are.
We're part of the machine. And
I'm already in on this.
Into it.
Right? All right.
I was going to ask Anna if she would read it to me.
Sure. If you call, we can all Skype. Every night, if you want to read it, there are five books in the series, so
buckle up,
indeed. Okay, so we've reached the end of our show. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, very excited to be here.
We're glad to have you. I'm sure we'll have you back again
and again
and again.
Yay!
Forever.
That's kind of scary. I'm Anna, and you can find me online, and I'm going to try and spell it right this week.
Good.
H-E-L-G-A-G-R-A-C-E. That's Helga Grace.
I'm Aline, and you can find me on Twitter at Surly Spice, S-U-R-L-Y-S-P-I-C-E.
And these guys.
I'm Allie. You can find me at ASWATKI1 on Twitter.
And I am Amy, and you can find me at AMYDIEG on Twitter. And you can find us both running the Girl Gang at jointhegirlgang.com.
And follow us on Twitter at jointhegirlgang.
Yes.
Do we have to actually join the Girl Gang to follow you? Or
I think
that
we are in the Girl Gang by default.
Well, if you follow the Twitter handle that you have joined.
If you follow us, you have joined.
Okay. If you support the women around you, and not around you, just all the women in doing the things that they want to do, you are, by definition, part of the Girl Gang.
Awesome.
This is good.
Yes.
I will look for my membership card in the mail.
Don't look too hard.
Do we have another, can we rename the mail to something else?
The Post?
Yeah, let's call it the Post.
I call it the Post.
The mail is too patriarchal.
Yes.
On that note, our in-out music was provided by the lovely Julie Jergens. You can find her on Twitter at Hi Miss Julie. Thank you.
Coming to the conference? Sorry, this is not really.
Not only are we coming, we will have.
We're presenting twice.
Presented. Yes.
Ladies, I'm going to be there anyway.
Excellent. Yay! We were going to talk about this offline, but.
Yeah, you can cut that out. Or not. I'm just jealous.
Yes, well.
We can... promise not to have any fun.
Sorry, bro.
Lies.
Not too much.